The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
And welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Alyssa Mastromonaco and I frame a whole discussion on white suburban women voters in terms of Bachelor in Paradise. It's a wild ride. Then writer Jill Gutowitz joins in studio with Tien Tran and Kieran Deal to discuss what it means to have idols. Then, as always, the hills will die on. Before we get started, a little bit of housekeeping. If you want to submit a Hill You'll Die On, record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it to hysteria@crooked.com. If you want to submit a question for Dude You Ask, please send it to us at hysteria@crooked.com. That is an email form. You don't need to make a video or a voice memo of that. You can also submit questions via Twitter or Instagram or any of the other socials that we're on. And don't forget to check out the segment on IGTV on Crooked Media's Instagram. That is Crooked Media on Instagram. We also restocked the Hysteria Muscle Tee along with some of your other favorite Crooked items. You can go to store.crooked.com to take a look and get some merch. I want to give a shout out this week to a special group of listeners. This week, I want to give a shout out to everybody who listens who is from Denmark or has Danish roots. Congratulations on not agreeing to sell Greenland, and congratulations on not having President Trump visit your beautiful country. Now let's get to the show. Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Alyssa.
Hi, Erin.
Okay, so Alyssa, I think you've known me for long enough to know that I get lunatic theories about things like Sex and the City taking place in the Black Lodge, Kevin in Home Alone being dead, etc.
I love that about you.
Thank you. Well, I sometimes have lunatic theories that seem to have a little bit more social repercussions. So do you want to hear my latest one?
Please hit me.
Okay. So I was watching Bachelor in Paradise last night.
As we all do.
Let's be honest with ourselves. I was watching Bachelor in Paradise, which is my favorite and only reality TV indulgence. And as I was watching it, there is a woman on the show this season who is bi. And she has a girlfriend, and she has also been seeing a guy in the Bachelor in Paradise world. Mm-hmm. And as I was watching last night, I was thinking about earlier seasons of The Bachelor and shows within that franchise and how much more conservative it used to be and how the show has sort of always been a little bit of a barometer of the tastes and tolerances of like middle American white female sexuality. And the show has now kind of moved in a direction that maybe spells some trouble for the Republican Party.
Do you mean that Paradise has become a bit woke?
I think Paradise has become a bit woke. And I think that its wokeness is a reflection of the fact that a lot of people who are just suburban women, regular, normal, run-of-the-mill, basic American women are open to the idea of a bunch of things that even 15 years ago they were not open to.
Well, because you know what I think's interesting? It's sort of like, remember a gazillion years ago in the 80s when a reporter, someone was asking Michael Jordan, you know, about endorsing a Democrat for president. And he said his response, allegedly, this actually you can't find documentation anywhere, was that he said Republicans buy Nikes too, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that where we're going, using the Bachelor in Paradise franchise as our North Star, is that like suburban women, guess what? They have kids that are trans. Like they have kids that go to school and they don't want them to be shot. Like they, real life is just creeping in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think that heartless social attitudes that are shouted the loudest by Trump's close advisors and Trump himself, like being intolerant of people who are LGBTQ, being completely inhumane toward immigrant children. I think that heartless social attitudes that get the MAGA hat crew riled up kind of alienate the type of women who maybe are like watching The Bachelor and but would have normally voted Republican. Because I think we can't go back.
Right. Like before, I mean, look, none of this stuff is new, right? But at least it was a little bit more under the radar. And most of the suburban women were like, I voted for Donald Trump because I believed in his tax policy and I'm pro-life. But like those two things are not what he's doing on Twitter every day. Like the vitriol, the hate, like inciting thing, like just inciting just terribleness. Mm-hmm. And I think they're like, hard pass. Like, mm-hmm. This isn't what I signed up for.
Right. I mean, we've been seeing headlines since 2015 about how Donald Trump was turning women off. So on one hand, it seems a little bit like, yeah, we've been hearing a lot about women being turned off, but we haven't really seen proof. But I actually think that I have another kind of lunatic theory. I think that there's a few things here. First of all, Donald Trump did win white women by 10 points, but that's less than any modern Republican candidate won white women by. So he did win white women, but by less. Also, right. Also, I think that part of the reason that Trump won in 2016 was obviously voter suppression, but it was a historically low turnout election. And I think part of that low turnout can be attributed to the fact that after the Access Hollywood tape came out, nobody could fathom a world in which Donald Trump would win. Everybody just
totally
everybody trusted that everyone else would show up and vote. And we didn't. So I think
like the man had a tape where he said, you can grab him by the pussy, you can kiss him and do whatever you want. People were like, OK, I'm not going to take a day off to vote. Like, we're good here.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And I think now that we're seeing a new round of headlines about suburban women being turned off by Trump, being turned off by his rhetoric, being turned off by his rhetoric on immigration. The latest one was this week where it showed that there's an article about how suburban women overwhelmingly support gun control measures.
Right.
And, you know, the Republican Party isn't really doing anything except paying lip service to that. But I think that at this point, it's like, you know, people actually have Trump in office now. So they see what could actually happen. And I think in 2018, we had some indication that the Republican Party is definitely in trouble.
They are in trouble. I mean, especially in places like, I mean, of all places, Texas. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, they are again, like you were saying, the spread of women used to be like 22 points. I mean, he only won Texas by 9 points. Mm-hmm. And Beto got within 3 points of throwing Ted Cruz out of office.
Right.
And I think that part of it, too, is that if you are, you know, anyone, I guess, but say you're a white suburban lady and you look like there is the Donald Trump mania, the way that he talks, his vitriol, his hate. But the problem is that there's like Donald Trump at the top and then there's his rabid base at the bottom, right? Mm-hmm. But the two of them are playing like Pac-Man to everybody in the middle and eating them up. So it's like, you can't have someone, there are no Republicans, literally, I can't think of any except all the ones that decided to retire.
Very brave, by the way, so brave.
Brave, who say, you know what, I'm a Republican, this is what I stand for, and I don't stand with Donald Trump. Almost nobody is doing that. So that's why I think so many of these women feel like there's no place for them in the party right now. And I think that we both know it's like a right now thing, not a forever thing.
Mm-hmm. Although the spread, there seems to be a trend. In 1994, 42% of women were Republican and 48% of women identified as Democrats. So, you know, just a small distance between those two groups. But in 2017, only 37% of women identified as Republican and 56% identified as Democrats. And that's a pretty decisive move in one direction. So I think that that's something to keep in mind, too. It could be a just now thing that Republican women are like, ugh, I don't like this guy. And then as soon as we have a Mike Pence who does exactly the same things as Trump does, but he does it while doing an impression of Ronald Reagan constipated, I guess. I wonder if they'll go back at that point or if the lid has finally been pulled off where it's like, look, this has for all intents and purposes, been what the Republican Party has done, but quietly for a while. And this is, you know, just because we have a nicer person at the helm now doesn't mean that the things that they're doing are different. Do you think that white women, suburban white women, and we say suburban white women because suburban women, there's a plenty of people of color who live in the suburbs. Suburban white women, do you think that they will want, they'll use that as plausible deniability to go back to the Republican Party?
Probably, though I want to give them a little bit more credit here. I think that'll take more than a Mike Pence. Like, I feel like anyone associated with Donald Trump is fully tainted, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, well, actually, I guess everyone's sort of tainted by him now. But I think someone who's a more like, you know, like Mitt Romney vibes, I mean, he's tainted too, but someone who's a little bit more like statesman-y
right.
and hasn't been utterly complicit
right.
in putting kids in cages.
Right. Somebody that you would let your grandma waltz with without being afraid that your grandma's going to get groped.
That is exactly correct.
I mean, I think it's interesting. And at this point, it's all just speculation. I mean, there are some surveys and there's polls and then there's kind of anecdata out of people talking to, I don't know, we stopped Julie at the Iowa State Fair and she was eating a corn dog and was like, well, I don't know. I don't like what he says about meat.
Right.
It's like, we don't really know until actual election day. And I think that 2016's biggest lesson was that no matter what the press is telling you, you have to vote. Oh my God, you have to vote. And you have to help other people vote.
Even if the line is long.
Even if the line is long. I mean, the another encouraging thing, though, is that I think that women especially learned the lessons of 2016 and 2018. A lot of the organizing, a lot of the canvassing, a lot of the calling. I mean, men did a lot of it, too. But many of those efforts were driven by women who were like, oh, fuck no. No more of this. So
exactly.
So I'm hoping that white suburban women, even though it is kind of, I don't think that it necessarily is a great reflection on someone that they're just now waking up and being like, hey, wait a minute. But you know what? Wake up whenever you wake up. You're welcome to come sit with me at breakfast.
Exactly. Eggs for everybody and maybe even a little bacon.
Frittata. I would do a frittata. We've got a bell pepper in the fridge.
Frittata.
I would make you a frittata.
Oh,
Oh, thanks. Do you want to do toast and roast this week? Do you got a toast
yeah.
or a roast? Okay.
I've got a roast.
Okay.
I made a sharp left this week.
Yeah. Okay. Who is it?
So this goes to the beginning of this conversation where we were talking about how certain television shows are aimed at maybe sort of like, you know, progressing and becoming a bit more woke. Unfortunately, you know who didn't become more woke? Dancing with the Stars.
Uh-oh.
And here is why I am so bummed about this. They had a great lineup, or they do have a great lineup. They have James Vanderbeek. They have Hannah Brown from The Bachelorette.
Okay.
They have Christie Brinkley. And there's Karamo Brown from Queer Eye. And then they just larded up Sean Spicer up into that piece. And like, why? He is a hateful, lying, like complicit Trump enabler who did nothing but lie to America for the 2 years he was press secretary. And I was just really bummed by that. I don't believe he deserved the chance to dance on the same stage as Christie Brinkley.
Right. He also doesn't deserve to dance on the same stage as our Secretary of Energy, who was also...
Fuck, I always forgot about that guy.
Oh gosh. Alyssa, for a good time, go ahead and Google GIFs of
cabinet.
Yeah, GIFs of him on Dancing with the Stars, because it is really something. But don't remind yourself that he's the Secretary of Energy, because that sucks.
That's a bummer.
Yeah,
that's my roast. I was like feeling toasty this week, but like it just made me so mad.
Yeah. I mean, again, like to invoke Michael Jordan, everybody buys Nikes, Republicans buy Nikes. You know, I think that it's interesting to have Sean Spicer on, whether or not that's good or bad. I think people are going to tune in at least to watch him humiliate himself. I mean, if anybody screams can't dance, it's Sean Spicer.
God. What if he's got magic feet? I don't know.
I don't know. But do you remember when Bristol Palin was on and they made her dress up in a gorilla suit?
No, I didn't remember the gorilla suit, but I did remember she was on.
They did. I think they low-key kind of reel in the conservative, like, figureheads. I think they reel them in being like, yeah, attention for you. And then later on in the show, when they're comfortable, they pull out the gorilla suit. And they're like, put this on, Bristol.
So then here's what I say to Dancing to the Stars. you have a chance for me to toast you by the end of the season. Prove me wrong.
Okay. Okay. That's fair. I have a toast that comes from a roasty type situation. So this week, the gag rule by the Trump administration went into effect. The gag rule would require any family planning or healthcare provider that receives Title X funding from the federal government to refrain from even mentioning the fact that abortion exists. I guess abortion is like Beetlejuice. If you say it three times, abortion. I don't know. So the gag rule is in effect this week, and Planned Parenthood has refused Title X funding because they say that they refuse to compromise on the health care of their clients and their patients. And so as a result of that, they're now cut off from a big source of their funding. I would encourage our listeners who support reproductive choice, who support Planned Parenthood, if you're thinking about giving to Planned Parenthood, this would be a really good week to do it, because they voluntarily are now refusing federal funding because they don't want to have to omit talking about abortion, which I think is pretty badass.
Well, and also there are some municipalities that are going to try and help make up that delta in the funding, like the city of New York is trying to do. But just because I live in the city of New York where they're trying to make up that gap in funding, there are so many other places that aren't. So even if you live in someplace that might be okay, you should help out your sisters across the country and still give.
Mm-hmm. Isn't New Hampshire doing that too? New Hampshire's trying to bridge the gap.
I think so.
Talking about someplace that's suddenly woke, New Hampshire. Jeez, you guys.
Well,
great
you
job.
Know what? They're staring Corey Lewandowski in the face and they're like, wrong turn.
Exactly. Okay, Alyssa, thank you so much for calling. I look forward to our conversations every week, and I will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
And welcome back. We're at the part of the show where we take a while to talk about something that's like sort of political, but not really that political. It's more personal. We call it personal political. It's a pretty obvious name. Let me welcome the three women that we have joining me today in studio. First of all, she's an actor and a free thing enjoyer. It's Kieran Deal.
Hello.
Welcome back.
I'm smelling my free thing right now. It smells very nice.
Is it aromatherapy?
It's aromatherapy. That's literally what it is. It's called Deep Relax Rollerball. Yeah.
Okay.
Balls deep in relaxation.
You should write taglines.
So classy.
Balls deep in relaxation.
Yeah.
That would be an episode title if we wouldn't get kicked off iTunes. up next, we have comedian and actor Tien Tran. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm great.
It was good to see you on Friday.
I know. That was so fun. I had never been to the Greek before.
So Pod Save America did a live show at the Greek on Friday.
Wow.
And my brother and my sister-in-law were both in town. And so I got to take them there and like ball out in the VIP area just because, you know, it would be kind of weird if they would not have like had all the hosts of their own shows allowed back like in that area. But it was really fun.
It was cool. It was like my first moment where I was like, this is very LA.
Wasn't this Saturday?
It was.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Saturday. Okay. Yeah. Well, I lose track of weeks. Days.
It doesn't matter. Either way, I was lying in my bed waiting to be summoned. I just want to be sure I got the day right.
But. I thought the Greek was going to be an indoor thing. So like my expectations were very different. And so walking up into that beautiful open air amphitheater, I was like, this is
it looks like Twilight.
It's beautiful.
It's like the set of Twilight.
It does.
It's stunning.
Gorgeous. I prefer it to the Hollywood Bowl. I'm going to just say it. The Hollywood Bowl is too big and too old.
Ooh,
wow.
Save that for the hills,
I know.
Aaron. What are you doing at the top of the episode?
Save it for the Hollywood Hills.
This is so relatable.
Smack talking.
To our listeners in states that are landlocked, of which there are many. Finally, I want to welcome to the first time to Hysteria. She is a columnist for Nylon Magazine, the only cool magazine. Oh, except for the other two magazines that she writes for, Glamour and Elle. She's also the overlord of lesbian Twitter, Jill Gutowitz. Jill, thank
Hi.
You.
You're
All
our first
hail.
Overlord.
Yes. All hail. All hail.
Thank
All
you guys
hail.
So much for recognizing me as the overlord of lesbian Twitter, which I wrote myself in my Twitter bio.
I mean, I think you wrote it with a level of confidence that I dare not question.
Yeah, no, I think I just got to a point where I decided that this is me. And I wanted people to know. So, and then I was like, I think it was probably the first confident thing I've ever done, actually.
Oh,
it's the first thing.
Oh, hell.
Declare yourself an overlord.
Just keep looking at Tian and being like, now.
Now. Oh, hell.
That's great. You guys are really, you've got a vibe over here.
It was the things and it was the free things.
Yeah, we had a bond.
We had a bonding moment.
The free things are great. But you know what's even greater? People that we look up to.
Good transition.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This week, we're going to talk about people we idolize, people we consider heroes, and who those people were. Jill, in our email chain prepping for this, you had a few early examples of people that you looked up to. Who were they?
Yeah. One of the ones that I immediately thought of, which I thought was, you know, it's always like funny in hindsight, because there's some people that you look at like Sally Ride, like, you know, just an American hero, somebody who like whose legacy has never been stained at all. But really, like one of the first women that I ever truly or people that I ever truly admired was Amanda Bynes, who, you know, like I grew up in the 90s
tight,
and I was
tight.
I was so obsessed with her and like all of you know, her shows like The Amanda Show and all that. But also her movies, like I saw She's the Man 4 times in the movie theater. It's still to date the most I've ever seen something in the in the movies.
What did you like about her?
I think that she stood out at the time. I think she was like the funny girl. You know, there was certainly like obviously like women in comedy at that time, but none that were kind of young and my age and somebody that I felt like I was like, oh, she's like me. She doesn't care about like boys. She cares about being goofy. Also, I am gay, but like, yeah. And I think that I think she was like really like spunky and cool. And even like her fashion choices weren't like super like high femme or anything. Anytime I saw her on a red carpet, I just felt very like I identify with this as a personality. Mm-hmm. And I just thought she was so funny.
Mm-hmm. She had a sort of young Jennifer Aniston vibe, I think. And did you ever see her early stand-up? She did stand-up when she
Amanda
was like,
Bynes?
When she was like 11.
I know.
I saw her audition for All That. It's like on YouTube or in the like crazy deep recesses of the internet. Yeah. But like she's very funny and very like animated. She has one, I think, where she like is trying to pop a pimple in her nose. She was 10 or 11. Right. So like these are
like peak
pressing.
Comedy.
Yeah. Pressing issues of that time. Is that the one you're talking about?
No, she actually has a set at, I think, the Laugh Factory or something.
No, I
oh,
that.
My God.
She gets up there and all of her jokes are like, so homework. You ladies know what I'm talking about.
And the crowd's like,
Yeah, exactly. It's like a very rare comedian on stage where the relationship with the audience isn't adversarial at first, and then the comedian needs to win the audience over. But yeah, it was really cute. You know, I remember the first person that I idolized, there was two people, and they were both men. Kirby Puckett, which has a little bit of a complicated legacy, Minnesota Twins center fielder.
I had to look him up.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, I don't know him.
He was a short, not athletic looking guy who was one of the greatest center fielders to ever play for the Minnesota Twins. He also had like this really cute little family and he was just great. He could jump really
high. I'm sorry, what were the first adjectives you used? Short and not good looking guy?
Not athletic looking.
Not athletic looking.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that a polite way of saying?
He was like chubby. If you look at him, he's built like a pile of circles. He sort of like runs with his like circle legs and his circle arms.
And you're like, and in your mind, you were like, yeah,
this guy. Yeah, exactly. He was also left-handed, which I thought was really cool.
Ooh.
And he was also really good in pressure situations. I remember in 1991 in the World Series, Game 6, he had like this incredible catch that saved the game for the Twins. And then he also hit a home run in extra innings, which won the game for them. And I loved him so much. The other one I really liked was Steve Martin. And I think that I might have been in love with him.
Yeah.
Which is something interesting about like idol stuff. Like, have you ever had an idol that you're like, do I idolize you or do I love you?
Amanda Bynes.
Yeah.
I'm always very clear.
Okay.
It's always a very clear line.
So who's a clearly delineated person that you looked up to?
I really like Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Yes. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. I think a lot of my personality might be based on her.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good one.
I think I like that she could like hang with the boys, you know, in Seinfeld. She wasn't written like at least when I was growing up, it's like, oh, this felt like a person, felt like a robust, interesting person who was charming and funny and mean and so mean sometimes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But also like just a very, very full personality. And one time I would host these videos for Vice, Vice Munchies. And the very, very first one I did was... it's fine. You know, it's like the first one that you did. I hosted a video about whatever it was, but people are, you know, it's a very male dominated network. And there were people in the comments, like 30% of the people like hated it. But one of the comments was, she's like Julia Louis-Dreyfus, only annoying or like only,
oh, no.
only boring or only annoying or something. And I remember my mother being like, well, kidding, they did compare you to Julia. You should take the good out of this.
Yeah. Did you just screen grab just the part?
Yeah,
where
I know,
it's
exactly.
Like, you're like Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
And then it's
cut
like,
off.
And then it's like big. And then you make it, you blow it up. You make it big with a poster of your face. And it's like from the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like one of those movie posters of a movie that is clearly bad. And all of the blurbs are like, dot, 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 good. Dot,
yeah,
dot,
yeah,
dot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then underneath, it's like, from movie watch, dot, sex.
Yes, Aaron, I am that bad movie poster.
No, people on the internet are fucking assholes.
Yeah.
But it is cool that they were sort of, like, on the right track. You were on the right track.
Yeah. And I think that in a lot of those, I've just noticed in a lot of, they don't really like when women have personalities.
Or opinions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or faces.
Yeah. They're not big
or
fans.
Or voices. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a really, you know.
Yeah.
How dare you have a personality?
Well,
like,
they just, I think there's a certain part of the population that doesn't really like it when we're anything more than a wet hole.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But, you know, too bad.
Name of the episode.
Wet. Anything more than a wet hole.
Also, wet is generous. Generous.
That's
dry
true.
Hole.
Yeah. Dry hole.
This is gross. Okay. Tian, who was the first person that you ever looked up to?
Ooh, I have my two are the entire I've talked about them a lot, but the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team from 1999, that team of like Mia Hamm, Christine Lilly, Brandi Chastain. Mm-hmm. It was like the first very big World Cup that took the nation by storm. I loved them. I also wanted to be a professional soccer player.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I was like right in that age of 9, 10. Was I 9 or 10? How old was I? Whatever. We're going to say 9, 10. Where I wanted to play soccer so badly. And they were these like amazing women. And I loved the narrative around that World Cup because they had originally wanted to put them in smaller stadiums. But they were like, no, we can fill out these stadiums. We can fill out the Rose Bowl. We can fill out these huge stadiums that are reserved for football, and they did. So I loved that they were like, that everyone was excited about them and that they were good role models.
Yes. Mm.
I was also in love with them too.
They were on the Kids' Choice Awards.
They were on the Kids' Choice. They were?
Mia Hamm was definitely on the Kids' Choice Awards a lot. I remember that.
Well, I good love
choice.
That.
Good choice, kids.
The other one that I loved is Molly Shannon.
Yes.
Molly Shannon was like the comedian that made me want to maybe like perform because of all those, that whole group of women, Sherry O'Terry, Anna Gasteyer, they were like loud, messy freaks. And I loved that, that like they didn't just weren't reserved to playing the wives of like a funny character or like the girlfriend. They were very distinct, wild characters on SNL that were like messy and gross.
Mm-hmm. I really liked Whoopi Goldberg for
me
that
too.
Reason.
Oh, yes.
It was like she's so unique. Like there was just no one else like her.
The one movie that I rented over and over from Wegmans was Eddie. Do you know that movie?
Oh, I used to rent Karina a lot.
Whoa!
Yeah, which is Whoopi Goldberg as a romantic lead.
Yeah.
Which I loved her in that.
Has anyone seen Eddie?
No.
No.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe I didn't idolize her so much. I haven't seen either of those things that you just said.
Oh, I'm glad we just like showed your cards.
Yeah.
But
I'm like, I like her.
You should check out Eddie. It's about her as a New York Knicks fan who is in the nosebleed seats, and she goes every year and they've been losing. And then they have this like new wild GM that comes in and is like, I'm hiring her to be the coach. So
what?
She coaches the New York Knicks and is so funny.
I miss movies back
like
then.
That.
Yeah, movies, that would never
one
get
one woman against them all. Yeah.
So So check it out, Karen.
I remember really looking up to like Olympic athletes too, apart from Kirby mm-hmm. Puckett and the entire Minnesota Twins team from 1991, because I'm a little older than everybody in here. But I remember the 1996 U.S. women's gymnastics yes. team being like so badass and so tough and so cool. I had a huge Dominique Dawes poster that I stole from an international gymnast magazine from the school library.
I won't put posters on a wall.
Why?
Oh,
not even Dominique Dawes?
Yeah, not. What did you do?
Do you know how elegant she was?
How did you decorate your childhood bedroom?
No posters, nothing on the walls. I had an uncle who was an architect, and he always said the most elegant thing you can have is a blank wall.
Oh my God.
Because of the possibility. And I was like, yeah.
Usually yeah. when I have a blank wall, yeah. it's because of the lazy.
Yeah, that's the one.
You guys can take it however you want. Just putting a hill in the middle of the episode. This is a hill-ridden episode. Very controversial.
Do you have stuff on your walls now?
Not a ton, no. I have some stuff on the walls, but not much.
Like what, like plants?
Mold.
Shelves.
Mold. Yeah.
There's a spider. Yeah. My plant. Yeah. Charlotte is up there. Yeah, there's the Crooked. I think Crooked gave us some winter gift.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. And then, Crooked gave us the front page of the Washington Post on the day after the 2018 midterms.
That's up there.
Oh.
There's some maps up there. There's a mirror, you know, like a nice mirror.
So you're up there. Technically,
it's like well, the house is up there. Whoever, it's like an interchangeable. Yeah, all right.
all right. Bringing it back to the subject of idols and not Karen's mirror.
Yeah,
which may contain an idol if an idol enters Karen's apartment.
Yeah, good point. Mario was there once.
What?
Stupid. You know that?
Wait, who?
The R&B rapper.
The R&B
rapper. Mario.
I was truly picturing the Nintendo guy.
Yes, I know. I could see it in your eyes. And I was like, that's not a person.
Luigi was there too?
No.
Oh.
You're like, you were on mushrooms?
Yeah.
What does Yoshi look like in real life?
I tried to undo the pipe under my sink and Mario. did you guys ever... idolize people in your life that weren't famous? Like, I remember looking up a lot to my teachers when I was little. Whatever teacher I had, I loved her and I thought she was the prettiest person in the world. Did you guys have a person like that?
I have two older sisters that are 8 and 9 years older than 7 and 8 and 9 years older than me. And I looked up to them so much. I thought everything that they did was cool. Like when they got Doc Martens, I wanted Doc Martens. When they wanted to like go out and listen to the Bare Naked Ladies, I wanted to listen to the Bare Naked Ladies. I thought everything they did was the coolest.
But you, to be fair, Tien, one of your older sisters.
Oh, that's right, too. Oh, yeah. One of my older sisters was on Ghost Rider, and I wanted to be on Ghost Rider as well.
Do you remember Ghost Rider? It was a PBS kids show that ran for like four seasons or something. And it was a bunch of kids from different backgrounds living in Fort Greene in Brooklyn, New York, who had a friend who was a ghost that only they could see and he could rearrange letters. It was like texting, but cell phones didn't exist.
Yeah. Honestly, my sister was one of the first Asian American actresses of that age, era that like was part of like a diverse cast.
That was, your sister was maybe my favorite one on the show. It was
really
between,
Tina Nguyen?
It was between her or Gabby. Those were my two favorites.
Gabby was great.
Karen, did you look up to anybody that you knew in real life?
Yeah, I think my mom. I think I really looked up to my mom. I thought she was so pretty. I don't know if does everyone think their mom is so pretty?
Oh, God, yeah.
I think that my mom never really emphasized.
I know.
Damn.
Wow.
No,
damn.
We weren't a pretty house. We weren't a house that like told each other that we were pretty. It was always like, that's such a good idea. That's such a funny joke. Like, you wrote such a good paper in school. So like, we didn't really have like looks based compliments in my house.
No, we didn't either.
I thought my mom was really smart. And I thought that she was smarter than everybody. That's what I thought of my mom.
We didn't have looks-based compliments in my house either, but I just remember being a kid and thinking, she's so pretty. Mm-hmm. Like, just thinking, like, oh, she's so pretty, her skin's so pretty, her hair is so pretty. I just remember thinking that, you know, thinking like, wow, she's so, you know.
I remember my mom has, like, red hair, and I remember thinking she was, like, Ariel, the Little Mermaid, because Ariel had red hair, too. So my mom, ergo, was, like, the sexy teenage mermaid.
She wore a lot of the puka shells around the house on her boobs
sometimes. Yeah. She
are those
had a
puka shells?
Clam
no,
shells. I think
shells.
Puka shells are not big enough.
Puka shells are the ones that like are on rope and mm-hmm. surfer boys.
Somebody
boys,
make yeah. that happen. That's a great idea.
Yeah. If you see a man wearing a puka shell, that's a sign he will give you chlamydia.
Run.
Generally
run.
Speaking.
Yeah. Okay, right. Cool.
Generally speaking. But yeah, you thought your mom down. Was, thought your mom was.
I thought my mom, I think, yeah, she was, I thought she was very cool. That uncle, that architect, I had like a cousin brother who I thought was like really self-determining, you know, kind of, you know, who like moved to London and like was doing all kinds of glamorous things. And when I was like a teenager, I went to Harvey Nicks and we drank rosé and I was like 19 and I was like, this is how you live. It was like Sex in the City, UK style, you know what yeah. I mean? Yeah.
Jill, how about you?
I had an eighth grade teacher named Miss Long that I like, I loved her so much. And I think that we had like a very weird or like one of those like funny teacher relationships where like looking back, I was like, oh, it was flirting. But like, you know, like it was, I just thought she was so, I think the more she resented me for being like loud in class, the more I was like, I love you. I don't know why. I like, I'm not sure if there was much merit to her teaching. Like, I'm not sure why I looked up to her, but I just like really, really liked her. I've always thought about doing, her name is Rebecca Long, which is just like a very hard name to find on Facebook. And I've never been able to find her.
Was
and
she like the young hot teacher?
She was. Yeah. And we like, you know, when you go on like that first trip, like in sixth or like eighth grade, and you go to like Boston or like DC or something with like the whole class and you sleep over. I remember like we had like the rooms next to each other, and me and my best friend kept like knocking on her door and running away. And like I got in trouble. And so she like punished me and made me like sit next to her on the bus for the entire like 5 hour ride home. And I was like, this is not punishment. I love you.
It's interesting. There's been a few people describing the overlap of like, you're like the young hot teacher. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I just remember thinking my mom was so pretty, and this idea of like that overlap with that, with idolization.
Yeah.
You know, like not that it has to be that, but like when you say, because I guess when you say like, who do you idolize? It's this idea of putting someone on a pedestal, mm-hmm. like above where you are. And like the way that even if it's through kind of like a lens of like a kind of, yeah. You know, like a colored lens, it's like how beauty can be associated with that, no matter right. what the person yeah. actually looks like.
I feel like if you, you know, as a kid, like if you remove, you know, any sort of like sexual want, that like adoration is like a very pure, you know, like I think obviously a lot of like the people I like looked up to when I was a kid are women, because I ended up like having that sexual want towards women. Mm-hmm. But I think like, yeah, in like when you're a kid, it's like in its purest form, just like admiring somebody is like, well, they're so pretty and cool and I like want to mm-hmm. be them. And then later it becomes something, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like even how you were talking about the sportsman, what was it?
Kirby Puckett?
Yeah. Like I was completely blind to male sports players. Like couldn't, I mean, I liked Derek Jeter because my dad loved the Yankees, but like mm-hmm. I couldn't name anyone besides him.
Yeah. I mean, that's an interesting thing when you're talking about idolization and looking up to people and deciding that through the lens of a kid that you're, everything about you is perfect. Because I think that sets you up to, if you're around them past a certain point, that sets you up for a fall. Like if you truly idolize somebody, eventually they're going to just be like a human. Mm-hmm. They never yeah. agreed to be the idol. Like they yeah. never yeah. agreed to all of the things that you put on them. And eventually they're a human and you become, it's a really hard thing to deal with, especially if it happens when you're a child, that you see your idol become a person. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that happening to you with any of your idols where you're like, oh shit, you don't know what you're doing either. Nobody knows what they're doing, but you don't know what you're doing either.
I feel like I was a big fan of, and I didn't say these in the top ones, but like when Bend It Like Beckham came out,
yes.
that was like yeah. Gurinder Chadha and like Perminder Nagra. But, yeah. but because it's like, but that's really the first time I saw like an Indian American yeah. woman on, or a British Indian person as the lead in a movie, like really like on, honestly, it's that representation matters yeah. thing. It's like almost like so mind blowing because you haven't seen it. Mira Nair was another one who like made these films that, you know, it's like the first time that you really see like contextually, like somebody who kind of quote unquote looks like you kind of in the lead, like kind of driving the narrative and the importance of that. And so those have always been filmmakers, I think mm-hmm. for me, that I found really compelling and incredible. When I was in college, Mira Nair came, she won a medal, an arts medal. And she, a sophomore year, and I put on this like mourning for her. Do you know what I mean? Like this, like just this, like a mourning of like arts with like all the like, you know, South Asian students or whatever. I was like so excited to meet her. And maybe she was tired. Do you know what I mean? Like maybe she was jet lagged or maybe whatever. And she was like very gracious when she was like in there, but there was like, there was like a quality to her that was different than what I expected. Do you know what I mean? Like it was like a, yeah. And it's like, but she's a person. Like at the end of the day, she's a person who
gets tired
and has weathered an incredibly challenging industry, like 30 years ago, you know what I mean? Like just, and was like one of the only people who looks like herself in America making these kinds of films. Like even just how tough you would have to be and the cost of having to be that tough and how do you navigate through the world? So, yeah, I remember that being a thing and talking to this theater dude that I like love this director. And he was like, yeah, there's a thing. We had this conversation about idolatry and yeah, nobody can really be that person, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's an important point. I remember reading an article maybe like 7 or 8 years ago where somebody asked Tina Fey about being a woman in comedy. And she was like, I'm not answering that question anymore. She sounded like so cranky. And I remember reading it and being like, gosh, Tina, you're real cranky. But then thought, oh my gosh, your entire career, you've been asked this over and over again. And people are putting it on you to be the woman in comedy, like coming to you, needing things from you beyond just needing you to do what you do. And I can imagine that that would get really, really exhausting.
Yeah.
And that would make anybody cranky. So I don't blame her at all. Tian, has that ever happened to you?
I mean, I see it. I didn't say this at the top either, but I really idolized my parents and very much looked up to them. And I think now that I'm like getting to that age where like they had me at this time, like at this time in their life. And I'm noticing now the like, that they're just humans. Like that point where you like start to realize that your parents are like complex humans that are having struggles and have their own set of problems and like are trying to navigate this world in the same way that you are. It's a very kind of eye-opening moment that you're like, okay, we're all just trying to figure this out. And no one, even in their like 60s and 70s, have it all figured out without their like set of problems.
When my mom was my age, I was a kid and I was 14. I remember being 14 and fighting with my mom a lot. And then now I'm imagining myself dealing with a 14-year-old and my brain rejects it. Yeah. I'm like, fuck you, you fucking. And I'm just imagining this like snotty little like too big for her britches, thinks she knows more than she does. And it's just like, good God. It's a miracle that I did not get murdered, to be honest. I mean, my mom was young when I was born, but I mean, I think that that is an important point of empathy where you have built up your idol and into this thing that they didn't agree that they were. And then it comes crashing down and you get mad at them.
Yeah.
And then you come back around and you start to see that you're actually kind of like them and you can be that for somebody else. Did you ever go through something like that, Jill?
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with like the parent stuff. I mean, I think, you know, at a certain point you realize that they are not these perfect people that you made them out to be. And I think I was really resentful at first of, I was like, well, you're supposed to know everything. And I think like only recently I've kind of like come to this place with them and also just with other people that I idolized in the past of like, that it's kind of a gift to not think of somebody like that. Like it takes the pressure off of them being so perfect. Like this is another, I think all of my examples are like objectively like not super well people right now, but Britney was like my another like idol growing up. And I think when like that all started coming like tumbling down, you know, like there was obviously a terrible like insidious like media narrative about her that I was, you know, in high school and like participating in it for sure. And now that I like can see Britney with like after some clarity, I'm like, there's so much more that I actually appreciate about her that I've like almost come to like idolize because I'm like, This is a person who like has dealt with severe mental health issues and like very unfairly in like, you know, the media and everything. And she's survived. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And I feel that way about my parents, too. Just that, you know, I'm happy that I see them in like their flaws and everything now, mm-hmm. because it makes me like love them more, or on a different level of, you know, just like, you know, we are the same. We are humans now. Mm-hmm.
Relatability in the idol can also be interesting, because I had mentioned like the Bendit, like Beckham, that director, Grindelwald, she has a new film out called Blinded by the Light that's out now. And mm-hmm. like, it's great and worth going to see if you're interested in going to see another one of this woman's movies. But I went to a screening last Monday, and she was at the screening, and she did a talk. Like she did a Q&A and she answered questions, and she was like, so relatable. Yeah. In the way that she, you know what I mean? Like like her personality, she was funny and like still kind of like had her joy, but like clearly had also encountered quite a few obstacles that she like hinted at, but like did in such a gracious and kind of flippant way mm-hmm. that it was like made you feel very included.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, cool, cool, cool. Like that I thought that was really nice to see, that it's like, okay, cool. Like I thought she just did a really elegant job of like, of making herself feel like a peer, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think she was able to relate to people in that room, not necessarily like an idol, but as a, you know, person to person. And a lot of people that people really do idolize, like Oprah or whatever, is like very good at like kind of just coming off as a human.
Yeah. Right. So I think that's almost super, sorry to interrupt.
No.
I think that's almost like a superhuman ability, though, because you take a look at Amanda Bynes, Britney Spears, and all of the people who we build up and build up and build up like fatted calves and then kill them and feast on their flesh, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like it is really mentally taxing to be a hero to that many people, and not very many people have the capacity to handle it. And you don't know until you're in that position.
They're not, but would you say like Brittany and Amanda, are they like tremendously relatable? Because when I think about them, I think of them as young women who are tremendously curated by a system.
Amanda seemed pretty relatable.
Okay. And I don't know her work, which is why I was entirely silent during your, and I was like, literally like, Kieran, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything.
It's okay to not know about Amanda Bynes. Yeah. It's okay. But I think the system of fame and idolization it's mentally tough, I think, for people. And I just think everybody here is in a position and a job that is publicly facing. And so what we do is something that people, in its best state, people will read it or watch it or listen, and they will relate to it, and it'll mean something to them, including this podcast. Mm-hmm. So we were emailing about this before. People come up to every single person at this table and have told you in one way or another that they admire you.
That's not true. I did not have any of those experiences when you were, and I thought that was hilarious when you guys were all like, we're broken. Oh my God. We don't know how to handle it. I was like, I would be fine with it. I would be the Cate Blanchett of comedy about it. I'd be like, thank you so much. Let me record this. I'm just, hold on. Let me just take my telephone out. Say it again. Like, say it again. This is going to be my ringtone now.
Compare me to Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Yeah, in a
please,
mean comment.
Kindly repeat yourself. Thank you so much. And I just like open my arms, give them a big hug, and just stroke their hair, and then be like, I must be going now.
So Kieran would be a great Oprah.
Okay.
Yes. But the rest of us talked about how having people compliment us or tell us that they look up to us is tough. Jill, how do you handle it? How do you feel when somebody comes up to you and is like, I look up to you?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that I think it's like morphed over time. I think that, you know, the first few times that anyone ever said something like that to me, obviously I was like, it meant everything. And I think like I'm at a point right now, I don't know why, but this is what we were joking about in our email chain, that I like feel broken about this, that a lot of the things that people say to me, they'll like, you know, DM me or tweet at me and say something so, so meaningful and personal, like about how, you know, reading something I've done, like helped them come out to their mom or like something like that, like something that's just so like I like unimaginable pain, you know, and I'm like, I don't know how to respond to this in like a DM, you know, mm-hmm. that makes like sense. Because if we were like talking in person, I probably would like just my human, you know, reaction would be to like get like teary eyed and be like, oh, my God, thank you so much. But like, you know, it like being online like strips that humanization like away. And I find myself getting like I don't know how to respond, and sometimes I don't anymore, which is awful. But I feel like I'm not sure how to like give a part of myself to so many people, and which I think like sounds like a horrible person would say. But I think that like I have in the past like engaged very heavily with that and like opened my DMs and been like, I want to, you know, talk to people about coming out and like hear your experiences and whatever. And it's led to some like boundless relationships with strangers, you know, mm-hmm. Via like DMs and everything. And it's just like this weird, this is a rant now. It's just like having weird.
All I want to be like is send them my way.
Right. I don't know. I think the coming out thing is weird.
Yeah.
Because it is like, yeah, you know, having gone through it, it is so hard and so personal and so painful. And so like, I think sometimes when I don't respond, it's because I almost feel rude just being like, thank you. And like summing that up in just like a very small thank you. That means so much. And like that to me feels so impersonal that I just like shut down.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is a really heavy thing for somebody to tell you. But also, I think the internet has made it so we're in an unprecedented time of access to people who meant something to you. And I'm sure that there are things that you've seen or read or heard that influenced you that when they were influencing you, you didn't have the ability to reach out to the person who did it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And now people do. So maybe you were sending those thoughts out into the universe and now those thoughts can just like go into a DM.
Right.
Anchoring it in that kind of experience and having somebody be like, oh, this meant so much to me, feels like it would be heavier and more emotional than people being like, hey, I liked when you did that Pizza Hut song on Love It or Leave It. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like there's a difference. Or I would say like Hannah Gadsby off of Nanette with the special, or anyone who's come forward with Me Too, where it's like, you know, people like, because then that's like a part of like reliving something that's like so deeply personal to you that's been like, you know what I mean? Like, and then, I feel like that relationship might be a little bit different.
Yeah. And it's also weird because of like you were saying, like the accessibility thing of the internet. Like, I think the part of me that feels broken there is like I have very low self-worth. And so I feel very like undeserving of a lot of that praise where I'm like, me, like there's so many much more like thoughtful, smarter, you know, queer writers out there. And so for like somebody to say that to me, I think that I just shut down because I'm like, no, not me. Like,
but compliments and admiration, it's not like, it's not like tickets at the state fair where once you're out of tickets, you don't get to go on any more rides. Mm-hmm. Like if a lot of people meant something to you, they're not like depleting any finite resource by telling you that you meant something to them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
But you could also pay that forward.
Yeah.
And like in the, you know, like it's so, you know, that's really meaningful that meant so much to you. Here's some writers that have meant a lot to me that you might enjoy or might be able to check out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think I don't know. I just feel terrible after saying all of that. But I think I just, it's a more of a personal issue, with myself that I'm like, I don't feel deserving of such adoration. And so to be able to like receive it and then to even reply to it makes me feel like I know that I'm deserving of it, you know, to be like, thank you. Yes, you're right. I am great. whereas I'm like, you know, I'm not Amanda Bynes, you know, like I'm not, I think like if I was a kid and I had that kind of access to Amanda Bynes, like I would be like, that would be insane. But I'm also, I just feel like I'm like some fucking guy on the internet, you know, like I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know. I would say you could flip that. But you could flip that mentally, too, because it's like then anyone can be that.
Yeah.
It's like everything means something and everything
to
also
someone.
Means nothing. Yeah. It's like it's all the same.
Yeah.
It's like I'm just some guy on the internet. It's like, well, that's all anyone is.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that beyond being a writer or whatever, I think that's an important takeaway for anybody is that like any person can make immeasurable difference in the people around them. Yeah. Like, especially if you're in a position where you are speaking to people younger than you, or if you're in a position where you're providing some kind of care for people, like just imagining the kind of spider web of you in the center and all of the people that maybe what you did helped. And then those people have energy and thoughts and they're able to help people more than, you know, it's kind of a cool thing to think about, like that maybe you just kind of started a ripple and those ripples join with other ripples and make actual real change.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes when I get self-conscious about things like that, I remember that when I approach someone who I idolize or reach out to someone who I like find very inspirational or respect, that I personally don't expect or respect, you know, like,
right.
I just have to remember that, like, that maybe they are also doing that too, like just to like even send out that good energy and good energy.
Right.
You California
I'm
monster.
Sorry, I just walk in with like, or like,
stop waving your hands.
Stop
over
waving.
My three
I'm
things.
Waving the hands over
there's
the
a,
three things.
There's a yoga mat. Yoga mat on the middle of this table, and Tien is gesticulating
it's,
at it.
It's
I don't like it.
Putting so much at me, and I'm speaking like the mat now.
Would you like me to remove it from your eye line?
But just to remember that when I, like, if I'm in that position and I'm reaching out to someone, that, yeah, I'm just trying to just say a nice compliment.
Yeah.
And that I don't necessarily expect anything back. So when I, like, get in right. my head about having someone say something very kind and generous, I'm like, they did that because that is the end of, like, the end result of what they wanted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You
That's
know?
Good. It's like sometimes when you're like, you're handsome.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, no, I don't want to sleep with you. Just... take
yeah,
that,
right?
You know,
yeah.
Usually you say you're handsome at people you want to sleep with, though.
No, not necessarily. I've watched people do it.
Do you
to
yell
people.
It from a car? Are you driving down the street, catcalling men, mm-hmm. going, "You're handsome"?
I will after I leave the studio today.
Can I come with?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great.
You're going to skip yoga? Are you going to skip yoga, Ryan, to
no,
do that?
I'm just going to do it later this afternoon.
Yeah, I was like, because that's when it's happening. It's happening right after this.
When we talk about being looked up to and also being a person that looks up to other people. One of the things that I always feel when somebody tells me that, you know, something I did meant something was like my first response is just this like, it's like brainstem. It's brainstem embarrassment. I'm like, oh, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know, oh,
yeah.
No, shut up. You are. Like,
just throw it back at them.
Right. Yeah. But in the, I guess, because I've been kind of in a public facing job for years now, I've sort of started to allocate my energy differently, where it's not just about, all of my energy doesn't just go into the actual thing, like writing something at Jezebel or the Daily Beast or, be, you know, I have to allocate some of my energy to understanding my place in the world and in people's lives and trying to be and processing people talking to me about the work that I've done, which is like because otherwise you just get exhausted. You're just it's exhausting. And now I'm at a point where like I go through our inbox for hysteria and I will respond to, you know, when I have a few minutes, I'll respond to some like listeners that write in and I genuinely like it and I genuinely don't find it to be draining. But it's only because I've been like, oh, this is part of what you do. Because part of what you do is people will come and talk to you and you will talk to them and you'll have a nice exchange and they'll go out into the world and feel better and everybody will be happy and we'll hold hands and sing songs and hug and share blankets and it'll be great.
Yeah. I feel like that's actually important perspective because I've only really been, you know, like experiencing that kind of like thing for the last like year, maybe 2 years. And so I'm still in this thing of like, what, stop? No, I'm, no, guys, you're being dumb.
I'm
stop.
Still
please.
Waiting.
Yeah.
Just want to reiterate.
I mean, I know all of this feels like very self-important. I'm like kind of sweating over here.
I would say, don't sweat. You're an overlord, Jill.
Yeah.
I know this isn't, I know you're a self-loathing overlord.
Kieran,
we got to pick a lane. We got to pick a lane, baby.
Kieran, I'll come up with some burner accounts and just send some.
Thank you so much. Again. That's all right. But now we're thinking.
But Kieran, you're about to.
Yeah.
You're right now. You're in the middle of putting being on film for a show that a lot of people are going to see, and you're going to mean a lot to a lot of people.
That doesn't. That doesn't feel. I don't know. Like what I do think is cool is how contained the action of, like, I really like watching The Voice. Right. Like I'll watch like The Voice YouTube clips because classy bitch. But I like it. I was thinking about like, why do I really like this? And one of the reasons is I love the idea that somebody can be deeply anonymous. Like I've never seen them before. I've never heard them before. And they have a transcendent skill that is really part of their gift. And I've never heard their name. I think that's a really important and prescient reminder that like there's a lot of people on earth and like and everyone has something that's like really, you know, a connection to like their higher power, whatever, you know, however it is that is an expression of their creativity that is a real gift. And you might not know that person's name or whatever, but like that's accessible. Mm-hmm. And so your job, to me, isn't actually to, your job is to like access that when you're working. And I find that very separate from the results of your work.
Mm-hmm. But part of the results are that people are going to see what you've done, yeah. See that you've accessed the skill that you had to act on this show that's about to come out.
All right, let's relax, Ryan.
It's going to be great.
I am so excited.
I know you're shutting down.
Yeah, I'm excited.
It's going to be grand.
It's going to be great.
I'm going to carry around a little fucking knapsack and be like, give me some rice.
Are you gonna, I'm imagining you with like a, for whatever reason, this vision appeared in my head fully formed. You're carrying one of those like plastic dime store baskets full of little thank you bags, like a tiny little party.
Oh, I like this.
And your hand, whenever people come up and they're like, you're on that show. What, Sunnyside?
Yeah.
You're on Sunnyside. I love you. You can just give them a little thank you bag.
I just like, thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you.
There's like there's a couple chiclets in there, some stickers. And
I like love
a little, a little eraser
and a plastic spider ring.
Yeah.
Is it just these are, I just think we should work on workshop what's in the bag because those feel very trinkety to me.
Okay.
You know, maybe there's something more
meaningful,
like useful, like one mood ring,
like a stress, an anti-stress roller.
Yes, exactly.
So that you can be balls deep and relaxing.
That's exactly one. That's right. Like one, like just one useful thing and like a little fortune cookie style. Do you know what I mean? Like one of those fortune cookie.
I think that's great.
I think that's great too.
And this is the last thing. When you were talking, I was thinking of this, like Maya Angelou has this quote that she says that is a really beautiful quote. She goes, you know, think about the worst thing that somebody's ever done in the world, like murder, whatever. And he was, and you're like, you're capable of that because you're human. But if you believe that, then the opposite is true, you know, and whatever anyone's ever accomplished, like the full spectrum of humanity is available to you. And I'm paraphrasing terribly.
Anyone can
people
murder?
Could murder. Yeah.
We could all
wait a minute,
murder.
We could all murder
today.
Should we do a murder?
Yeah. We could. I think that maybe a lot of people link would to idolize
YouTube,
us.
Maybe
if
you
we
could
were.
YouTube clip. There's a YouTube clip, and it's better than what I said.
This is the second consecutive Maya Angelou reference on Hysteria. We had a reference last week too, so thank you for that. We're gonna just kind of keep the streak going.
Thank you so much.
On that note, I think we have to take a break. I think we solved it. We solved idolism. I think we solved it, guys. Let's take a break. When we come back, the hills will die on. Okay, we're back. We've gotten to the part of the show where we take adamant stances on things that don't really matter. It's the hills will die on. Let's get started with our listener hill.
The hill that I'm going to die on is... that loofahs are fucking disgusting. If you're taking a shower with a loofah and then not washing and drying it afterwards, it's just sitting in your shower collecting mold. And then the next time you go into the shower, you wash your ass with that moldy loofah. I don't care if anyone agrees with me. I agree with me, and that's all that matters.
That is the spirit of the hills. Wow. I agree with me. And that's
that
matters.
I love that.
What a campaign slogan. Somebody run for office on that. I agree with me.
I don't care if you agree with me. I agree with me.
And that's all that matters. Yeah. Oh my God.
I like that.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I agree with me. And then the people that would be supporting that person is like,
you agree with you, but we agree with me.
This is, I feel like...
We don't like you, but we like your slogan. Yeah.
I feel like language is folding in on itself. Yeah, right now. It's about to form a singularity.
I disagree with... I love loofahs.
You love loofahs?
Yeah. We're talking about the flower...
Yeah, loofahs.
I
have one, I guess.
Yeah, I have one.
I don't
one.
Love it. I don't feel anything strongly toward it. It's just kind of there.
This is pretty timely for me, actually, because my...
oh, my God.
I'm actually so glad I have this vessel to talk about this. My girlfriend recently roasted me because I don't use a loofah, and so I bought one for her and for me because I was self-conscious about it. And now, like, literally in the last 2 weeks, I've been using a loofah and I feel it feels very alien on my skin. But hearing that listener say that people use their butts the loofah for their butts. That's disgusting.
That's disgusting. That actually...
I have been not using the loofah on my butt. I can't imagine like putting something between my cheeks and then leaving it to rot in my shower. That's disgusting.
It's like reusable toilet paper, basically. It's like,
That feels like a personal trauma that is being brought up. Like, I feel like she maybe witnessed that.
I feel like she was forced as a young child to watch person after person come into the shower. Cheek after cheek.
It was just that stopped all of us.
It was like a very vivid visual for me, where getting into the shower, I'm like, oh my God, what's on that? Oh my God, what is that? Like, let's discuss it. Yeah.
I think you do have to wash anything that you wash yourself with.
Oh, and I have been washing it. I've been very delicate with my loofah.
You know, just the idea, you do generally have to wash the things that you wash yourself with. Yes. You wash your towels, your bed
sheets. The dirt doesn't just like evaporate
off of it.
It's not like a pile of laundry where if there's something at the bottom, if it's been there for long enough, it's clean. You can just take it out and wear it again.
Yeah.
Right?
I bet loofah would be one of those things that if you like put it on like a... I don't know, run it through some science that I can't be specific about right now.
Ah, yes, running it through science.
Run it through some science.
That it would show up some, like, nasty.
Disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
If you did, Check out science.
Yeah. I've been hearing great things about this science.
Science.org.
Everybody,
you heard it here.
Okay, I'll go next with a hill I'll die on, because it's dumb, because I have to do one of these every week, and I'm running out of opinions. I'm running out of opinions. If you are an able-bodied person and you live or work in a building that has an elevator and stairs, and you are trying to get to the second floor, don't take the elevator.
Yes.
You are wasting energy. You're wasting everybody's time. You're depriving yourself and your muscles of some useful, healthy movement. And it's a selfish move. If you're able-bodied and you work in a building where stairs are an option, take the fucking stairs.
You lazy piece of shit.
You lazy piece of shit.
Yeah,
I agree.
That's the hill I'll die on. But also, don't judge people if they're getting on the floor. I mean, that's another
Are you
thing.
Dying or not?
I think that, like, you know, this is a thing that you need to reckon with yourself and your own heart. But I try not to judge people who are getting on the elevator at the second floor unless I've seen them take the stairs before. Then it's just like, okay, I know you can take this.
I really feel like the way you should have ended that hill was, I don't care if you don't agree with me.
I agree with me.
I agree with me. And that's all that matters.
And that's all that matters.
Okay, Kieran, do you want to go next?
What a beautiful sentence that was.
It's just gorgeous.
It was so good.
Stools. Anti-stool.
Okay.
Anti-stool. What are you looking at me like I'm a crazy person?
Because I need you to be specific.
Yeah, like go on. Yeah.
So there's a couple of scenarios. Like if I'm in a bar, mm-hmm. I don't want to sit on the stool.
No.
That's ridiculous. Like I'm an adult woman.
Grow up.
Exactly. And it's like, and the neck and turning my neck, very uncomfortable for my neck. It's like physically uncomfortable for my neck. And then I'm like, don't be a pussy. And I'm be like, no, you don't be a pussy. I don't need to be here with you.
I've never said that to you.
No, I know. I know. I'm sorry. I got very personal, Tian. I just feel so connected to you because you were looking at all my stuff. And then, because it's like, and even like at the TCAs, it's like I looked in all the photos of are like my face in like weird positions, which is very funny to me. Like I posted it on the internet, but I was like, you know why? It's because of that fucking stool we had to sit on for a fucking hour. So they give you like the low back chair where it's like really only like up to your tramp stamp area is even given a back.
Oh, that's
Do you know what
worse.
I mean? And then you have to sit there looking like a fucking human erection and like smile. It's not happening, guys. It's not happening.
I hate feeling
stools.
How do you feel about step stools?
Yeah, well, a step stool is a temporary stool that you're using to get to a place and then you return down. It's not like a place where you're parking your body to sit for a long period of time. Like, why are you only building that part of the apparatus to sit in?
Yeah.
It's like, fucking make half the number of seating furniture and then use the other hat like and then use the other stool as the back for the fucking get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying.
My biggest gripe with stools is the little bar where you're supposed to rest your feet. I like wear heels.
Yeah.
And if you're wearing heels, you can't.
They tilt.
Yeah, they like slide and you do the weird like where you're leaning
forward. Stools are not feminist.
No.
No.
Stools are not feminist. No.
Stools are sexist.
Stools are part of the patriarchy that is meant to keep you down.
Okay.
Fuck stools.
Yeah, fuck stools.
Yeah, fuck stools. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Dan, do you want to go next?
Yeah. The hill that I will die on is that if you use the express lane at the grocery store and you have more items than listed in the express lane, please kindly get the fuck out of the lane. It makes me so mad because it's one of those things where, like, when people do it, they know no one's going to say it. It's like a point of honor that you're like going in there with 20 items when you're in a 14 item line. That's what Trader Joe's.
What's the number? What's the number? So it's like,
if it's 15 items for an express lane, okay? If you're rocking in there with like 16, 17, fine. If you're going in 20, 25, you have to leave. That is for a line for people who are like on the go, grabbing salads and maybe a few things for the week, and then you're through. But it's really rude because I know it's like one of those things where they do it because no one will say.
You can say something.
No, because it's like, what am I going to do? Stand there and count their things, which I have.
You could do that. Did you see that video on Twitter last week of the woman who stood in the bus lane and wouldn't let any of the cars pass through the bus lane? No. And people were cheering for her. It was like the pettiest thing I've ever seen.
Was it
so
in San
bold.
Francisco?
I forget where it was, but there was like all these cars were like honking at her and she just stood there and she was like, mm-mm, not taking this today. I'm not doing this. She wasn't even like driving. Like she had no reason to be angry.
Oh my God.
So you
I will be
this
that,
could be you.
I'll be that woman.
Yeah.
Standing in the express lane being like, show me your items.
Standing boldly in your power.
That or, is. Or you could do it in a, you could do it in a like a, you know, got to go back to kindergarten or bring on a. I was like, oh, we're going pretty liberal with the numbers.
Me though, in conflict, I'll be like, this was something about kindergarten. Hey, you counting or what?
I think that's
numbers are a concept too.
I think that comic book fans would refer to that behavior, the bus blocking behavior and the line counting behavior, as chaotic good.
Yeah.
I think that's chaotic good. Okay. It's like if somebody is trying to go through the line and they're breaking the rules and you like instill chaos in order to in order to get good to happen.
Right.
Okay. I'll try to channel more chaotic.
Yeah. And if you get punched in the face,
yeah.
I take no responsibility. Cuz that could happen.
I'll come in with a black eye. I stopped someone from checking out at Trader Joe's.
If you get punched in the face, you video conference me immediately.
Okay. All right. I think we've got it all figured out. Jill, do you want to bring us home?
Yes.
I got you.
I know this one might be pretty controversial, but my hill to die on is bringing music and speakers to the beach. That makes me want to die. And I know that, like, I am, like, in my soul, like, an old person, like a curmudgeon. And I also think I have a very narrow experience of the beach because I grew up, like, Jersey Shore. Like, I'm from New Jersey, and so, the Jersey Shore, I don't know, there was always, like, kind of, like, light music happening somewhere for the boardwalk or, like, somebody's speakers or whatever. But I feel like in L.A., every time I go to the beach, there is either, like, a large family who has brought a tent and like an all day setup who has like a boom box and it's like, now you're listening to my music, bitch. Mm-hmm. Or it's like, and that's not okay. Like I went there to read by myself. Like that's not okay. Or it's like, you know, a group of like three or four girls who like brought their like Beats pill. And like, I mean, like I can be on board if it's like very agreeable, like top 40 music where I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of know the song. Like too late now to say sorry. But like, if it's like, I don't know, like EDM.
Wait, what song
or
was that?
It's Sorry
Justin
by
Bieber.
Justin Bieber.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Apologize.
I'm sorry.
Have some respect.
I'm sorry. But
yeah, that drives me insane. I'm like, for me, the beach is like, I am an old person, but like, it is sacred. Like, I want to go there to relax and to mm-hmm. hear the sounds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Naomi Ekperigan, another co-host of Hysteria, has completely agrees with you. She's like, I don't want to hear your music when I'm in public.
Right.
It's just, I think it's very rude. And I also was thinking, as you were saying that, so we went to the beach this past weekend and we have a dog mm-hmm. and there's plenty of beaches where a dog is just not allowed, which fine.
Yeah.
You can have a beach where there's no dogs allowed. I think a quiet beach, like a quiet car would also be something nice.
Oh. I would love that.
no musical like expressions. Yeah. You don't have to be like silent.
Yeah.
But just no music.
Yeah. I went to the beach with my roommate once and it was like she did the bus lady thing. It was like the boldest thing I've ever seen somebody do. So we were both like annoyed by the music and she was like, "You know what? We deserve silence," and like went out and like asked them to turn it off, and it was chilling. Like I was like paralyzed by it, yeah. But they turned it off, and then I was like, "Oh, now we get to actually." Oh God, it worked. Oh, but it was like it felt very. I don't know. I also come from like a long line of like white people who are angry about small things, and so like people at restaurants and like sending food back. Like my whole family does that. It's like mortifying. So I think that like there is a part, even though I'm self aware, there is a part of me that still like gets like unreasonably angry about things like this, about public spaces.
I think it's a courtesy thing. I think courtesy brings all of this together. Like, I think. That people playing loud music in public is not very polite. It's not illegal, but it's not very polite.
Yes.
And I would never call the police on somebody who is doing anything, but I don't think it's a bad thing to take your shot and see if they'll turn it off.
Yeah.
And if they're like, no, then it's just like, okay, well, I'm just going to be annoyed, but whatever.
It's a little arrogant to assume that everyone wants to listen to what you're listening. I agree with you because I had this hill as well.
Yeah.
You know, a version of any public music.
Right.
It's just like, it's arrogant to believe that like whatever someone is listening to is a thing that everyone else also wants to listen to. Like, can you see past your own face?
Right. And it just says something about that person that it's just like, because they're just choosing not to care. It's not like, oh, they're not like, oh, I bet everyone wants to listen to my music. It's just like, I don't care. Like, this is my space now. And that mm-hmm. domineering personality is like so off-putting to me as a person who is like constantly crumbling in public.
A lot did come into focus when you're like, I grew up on Jersey Shore. And then I was imagining the focus of Amanda Bynes and Britney Spears and your idols all coming.
Oh, I'm trash.
It was all coming together.
I'm trash. Yeah.
No, I'm just seeing that like Jersey. I can just hear the EDM coming off of like someone's like situation style. Like boombox music. Yeah.
Yeah. That's totally
boombox music.
Boombox music.
Am I 60 years old?
Yeah. We've all aged so much. We're going to go out there. It's the year 2170. The Crooked offices are now, I don't know, it's a Soylent factory. We've been like, oh my God. We have to, and then the rest of the movie is us trying to find our way back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just four women trying to find their way back. Okay. That's all the time we have. Kieran and Tien, thank you for stopping by. Jill Gutowitz, thank you so much for coming by for the first time.
Yay. Thank you for having me.
And thank you to Alyssa Mastromonaco for calling in. And there will be more Hysteria next week. Hysteria is a product of Crooked Media. Caroline Rustin is our producer. Our editor is Sarah Barrett, and Kyle Seglin is our sound engineer. Thanks to our digital team, Nadina Melkonian and Elijah Cones, for production support each week. Get your gun.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.